Welcome to Hey YA! From great new books to favorite classic reads, news stories to the latest in on-screen adaptations, Hey YA is here to elevate the exciting world of young adult lit. Hey YA is a book riot podcast hosted by Erica Azafetti and me, Tirza Price. And we are recording this on Friday, September 22nd. Hello, Erica.
Hey, what's up, Tirza? How are you? My caffeine is hitting. I'm happy. It's like 70 degrees outside. I'm getting some nice breezes. So this is like the perfect time
Yay.
For me to record and speak with you. How are you doing?
I am great. How about you? I mean, you seem like you're really good.
I think the caffeine is just caffeining as it should. Yes, awesome. So I'm chilling. I know you're dealing with like a spicy feline over there though. So your mood might be a little like little terse, perhaps.
Dolly Parton is always spicy, and she's recently decided that, you know, having like 1,900 square feet of indoor space at her disposal is not enough. And so she's trying to climb the window screens. And
as you do.
I'm just like, you know, could we not? Maybe.
Could you not? Yeah.
Yeah.
So. It was perfect. Before we started recording, I heard you admonishing Miss Parton. And I was like, divas don't get admonished.
No.
Just keep sleep with one eye open, Tirza. That's all I have to say for you. Like, I'll pray for you.
Thank you. She just kind of looks at me like, psh, what do you know? And just saunters like, away.
Exactly. Exactly. I love it. And the name, I'm from Nashville, and I just really appreciate the name.
I didn't realize you were from Nashville. That's excellent.
Yes. I've never said. Yes. My aunt lived down the street for a while. She lived down the street from Dolly Parton's recording studio.
Amazing.
So, I appreciate the name. Yes.
I love Dolly Parton. And when we got Dolly, she was this abandoned kitten in our yard. And she was totally going to die if we didn't take her in because it was like cold and her mom had abandoned her. And so we brought her in and we were like, okay, it's time to name her. And I just, you know, I really appreciate good punny cat names because I don't know. I just do. And
that's the cat parent in you. Cat parents, yes. We are, you know, it's just how we are.
Right? And so I was trying to come up with like a really good one, and I think we just watched a documentary on Dolly Parton, and I was like, nice. Dolly Parton!
Dolly Parton, yes.
And the looks that like vet techs give me anytime I bring her into the vet, it's pretty great. But it's like almost like, I feel like I should almost be embarrassed, but I'm like, look at her. She's ridiculous.
No!
Like, I had to give her a silly name because she is a demon, so
she looks like she goes on stage with big hair and, you know, sings about Jolene. I mean, it's perfect. She's a diva. They can deal. They will deal.
Yes, and she's got long hair, so she's very majestic in that way. Yes,
exactly.
Oh my god.
And I also feel like the pun goes in line with your book titles. I mean, I'm just like, this is who you are. Live in your truth, Tirza. It's okay. We love and respect you.
I like a good pun. Yes. I do like a good pun. So, oh, man. But anywho, now that we've gotten that out of the way, we are excited. We're going to be talking about a lot of good stuff. But first, let's hear from our first sponsor.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Okay, we have a ton of news items today. Do you want to kick us off, Erica? Because we've got, it's like a nice little bullet point list.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're bullet pointing today. Very professional, very organized. So, in very exciting news, LeVar Burton will lead the band Books Week as its honorary chair. And I believe he is the first actor to serve as such. Band Books Week will take place this year from October 1st through 7th. And it's an annual event that highlights book banning and just shows the necessity of the freedom to read and having access to information and stuff like that. I believe he will be having a conversation on October 4th, virtual one, with Banned Books Week Youth Honorary Chair. So that's cool. LeVar Burton, there is a reading rainbow shaped part of my heart that I developed from childhood. Like, when I hear that song now, even, it's like, it just makes me feel so, like, happy. It's like nostalgia. It's like nostalgia times 100. Like, LeVar Burton is that, like, I don't know. He's like,
he's a national treasure.
He is. I need statues. I love LeVar Burton. And he actually did a documentary recently called The Right to Read. It's award winning. And I believe it came out just this year. And it's about how literacy and the right to read is actually a civil rights issue. So I haven't seen it. I just found out about it, but I want to see it. I love LeVar Burton. I stan LeVar Burton, period. So this is exciting news. I'm just excited to hear about LeVar Burton things.
Yeah. No, he's awesome. And this is a good pick. And I don't know, it feels kind of like Banned Books Week is every week now, because there's so much banned. Like, I was out to eat with my parents at a Mexican restaurant, and the TV above the bar was, like, talking about banned books, and I was like, oh, Lord. It's everywhere, and I think, you know, it's important that we all are staying vigilant and eyes open and active and actively, like, getting involved in our local community. And this is also, like, a really good opportunity. If you've not been in your local library lately, go to your local library, especially during Banned Books Week, and voice your support to your local library staff, because, oh, Lord, they need it. And we've kind of gone off about this before, so I won't, you know, beat a dead horse. But,
yeah,
definitely important stuff. So, and like, you know, just tell your local city council people and, you know, all of those, you know, elected and appointed officials who have a lot of power when it comes to, like, libraries and schools, like, we support diverse books. So that's my little spiel.
I appreciate your spiel. I will add a quick little note to it as well, that on October 7th, Banned Books Week is having a day called Let Freedom Read Day. And they're basically, it's dedicated to basically what you were just saying, just supporting or fighting against, rather, I should say, fighting against censorship in any kind of way. It could be a seemingly small way, big way, whatever. Just do what you can, basically. Yeah. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And less depressing news. The movie adaptation of The Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight by Jennifer E. Smith is now on Netflix, and it's called Love at First Sight. So they just, you know, pared down the title a little bit. I like the original title because it's very much in line with, like, the book. But yeah, it's now out. And actually, I haven't had the chance to watch it yet. I'm really excited to watch it. I've been in, like, my deadline cave this last week, last couple of weeks. So now that I'm out of that, I really do want to watch it. But I think I saw on Instagram that it was, like, number one in the country, in the U.S. on Netflix, which is very exciting.
Oh.
And I just think it goes to show that, like, people want rom-coms. People want, like, happy movies with love. And I love to see these YA books getting great adaptations. I hope we see more YA getting great adaptations. Hope we see more diverse YA romances getting great adaptations. But all in all, it looks really great, and I'm excited to watch it.
I have not seen it either, but it does sound good, and I am with you. Like, I feel like some of the, like, YA book adaptations that I've been seeing lately have been pretty good. And they're not, I feel like they're not always just, like, money grabs. And, like, some money grabs, if they're done well, it's like, you know, that's good. It's done well, whatever, it's fine. But I'm just saying, like, sometimes they reach back into the backlist to pull things out. And I think you said this book was first released, like, 11 years ago, right?
Yeah, I think so it was cool. Like 2012. Like it's it's been out for a long time. And Jennifer E. Smith does have another book. I think it's called Between Hello and Goodbye, and that was made into a movie last year, I believe. And I have not read that book, and I have not seen that movie, but I remember reading and loving Statistical Probability of Love at First Sight when it first came out. So I'm especially excited to see this movie. It's really cool to see movies that are like adaptations of YA books that came out when, you know, like 10 years ago or more. Because it's just, I think it's a testament of like showing how far a book can go, and just, you know, the idea that it's still finding a new audience this many years later. It's just really cool.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also cool to, I love being reminded of books or put on to books that I didn't hear about when they first came out, and then finding out about them mad later, and they're like, oh, yeah, that actually seems really cool. I'm glad that I was put on to this.
Absolutely.
That sounds fun. That sounds interesting. That's going on the to-be-watched list. And one last little news piece, perhaps you've heard of it, but that I have been watching, maybe like a little too much, a little marathon viewing, is the live adaptation of One Piece. One Piece is a manga / anime that has been running forever. I don't know if it's like the longest current, like longest anime that's still running. I'm not sure, but it has a lot of, there are a lot of manga volumes. There are a lot of episodes. I was not into it for the longest. I think I was overwhelmed by how much of it there was. And sometimes when you have anime and manga that has that much story, there's a lot of filler, and that can be annoying. But I did recently start watching One Piece. And by the way, the manga is by Eiichiro Oda. I did start watching the anime a few months ago, and then the live adaptation came out. And usually live adaptations of anime are kind of a little janky, but this one is actually good. Like, the casting is really good. It's diverse. The acting is like super on point. It's actually a good live adaptation of an anime / manga. The best one I've seen. Again, I don't watch too many because a lot of times they just look ridiculous before you even like press play. So I'm just like, even like the trailers. In the trailers, it's like, ooh, it's a no for me, dog. But this one is fun. And the story, if you haven't gotten into it, the story is about, it's in another, like, this fantastical world that's kind of like, I was about to say, has this pirate problem. Not all the pirates are bad. The main character is a pirate. He wants to be king of the pirates. There are these like really fantastical elements. He has these magical abilities from this thing called a devil fruit that makes him have, you know, like I said, magical abilities, but also makes it so he can't swim and he like drowns in water. So it's like a trade-off. But anyway, it's very fantastical. There's found family that's pirating. It's a fun, ridiculous show. I recommend.
Awesome. Yes. I have not gotten into One Piece, but you've talked about it before. And so, yay. I'm excited.
Yay. Yes.
Yes. All right. Yeah. Before we get into the meat of our episode, do want to give you a heads up that Book Riot's editorial team is writing for casual and power readers over at The Deep Dive. So over there, you can find weekly stories that inform and inspire readers drawn from our collective experience as power readers, teachers, librarians, booksellers, bookish professionals, and more. So recent stories for free subscribers have included a brief history of chain letters, a behind-the-scenes look at being Book Riot's managing editor, and the anatomy of an Obama summer reading list. And paid subscribers can get exclusive access to content, including a mega list of books that our readers think you should read, and access to community features, including the ability to comment. So during the month of September, which is almost over in a couple of days, all new free subscribers will be entered to win Parable of the Sower by Octavia Butler plus 5 other books. So to enter, you just have to start a free subscription at The Deep Dive. And there's no payment method required. You just sign up. So to enter and to sign up, you can go to bookriot.substack.com. That's bookriot.substack.com. And there's no purchase necessary to enter. So yeah, that's kind of fun. Check out The Deep Dive. So our topic this month is Latinx Heritage Month.
Yes.
Exactly. Which we did this last year, but it's fun to, you know, revisit this topic because we can look at new releases and books that we might have missed. And, you know, obviously we always support reading diversely outside of like these heritage months, but we also like to take the time to yell about these books and celebrate them.
Exactly. And it's also just another, it's just another way to hone in on a category of book to... There are so many, you know, books that get released each year, and it's like it can be easy to miss some. So it's just a good way to hone in on that too. Also, it's, you know, again, with the book banning, so this is a good way to counteract that. I don't want to like harp on that too much because we already discussed it at length. But yeah, so.
Yeah. Boo banners.
Boo. Yay,
diverse books.
You know that meme? Boo this man, boo. Where the guy's taking his hat, he's like, boo this man, boo.
Right.
That's what I say to book banners.
Yes. So, yeah, we've got some great picks for you. I guess I kick it off because I'm really excited about my first pick.
Yeah.
My first pick is the Luis Ortega Survival Club, and it is by Sonora Reyes, which if you are a listener of this podcast, you probably know how much I love their debut novel, The Lesbiana's Guide to Catholic School. I've talked about it so many times on this episode, on this podcast. So this is their second book. I really liked it. It is about Ariana Ruiz, and she is selectively mute. She really does not talk. She mostly only talks at home, but really she only talks with people that she feels comfortable with. And the reality is at school, she does not feel comfortable with like anybody. And so she doesn't really have a lot of friends, but she really, you know, wishes that she could have friends. She has this like really cool sense of style and fashion that's always like very eye-catching and eye-popping. Because she likes to express herself, and people think that just because she doesn't talk, she doesn't, you know, want any attention, but that's not exactly true. However, this is before the start of the book, and I'm just going to say content warning for sexual assault. It's not on the page, but it, you know, it is talked about, and the aftermath is also talked about. But at the beginning, before the beginning of the book, Ariana has made friends with Luis Ortega. And Luis Ortega is very popular in their school. He's very charming and he's outgoing, and he doesn't really seem to mind that Ari doesn't like to talk. And they have this relationship and they start to, you know, be romantic. But the very beginning of the book is immediately after a party that Ari goes to where Luis assaults her. And she's feeling really conflicted because she likes him. She kind of did want to be physical with him, but when it came down to it, like, she didn't say yes. And he went ahead and kind of forced the matter. So she's really like freaking out basically about what just happened. And she's also afraid that Luis's ex-girlfriend Shawnee is mad at her for getting with Luis. And so she's trying to avoid Shawnee. She's trying to avoid Luis at school because, of course, he's spreading all these, you know, rumors and lies about how, you know, sexually active she is. And so now all these boys are harassing her as well. But then she finds a secret note in her locker that leads her to this anonymous conversation with somebody who claims to have been a victim of Luis's as well. And that leads her to the small group of people who form what they call the Luis Ortega Survival Club, and they want to get revenge on him. And Ari likes having friends, but she's not quite sure what she wants to happen going forward. So I thought that this was, you know, obviously sometimes hard to read because it is about, you know, consent and assault and, you know, trying to basically, like, figure out, you know, what you stand for, but also how much, you know, Ari is willing to stand up for others and like what happened to her, because it's really hard for her to examine what happened to her and to not feel like, you know, she was asking for it or complicit in some way. She also kind of has a hard home life going on. Her mom had cheated on her dad before the start of the book. And so her parents are definitely fighting a lot and things are rocky there. So she doesn't always feel like she has a really good support system at home. Her parents definitely love her and take care of her. but they're not really providing like that emotional support that she really needs and wants at the moment. So yeah, this was just such a good book, such a hard-hitting book. I really I tore right through it. So I definitely recommend Luis Ortega Survival Club by Sonora Reyes.
Whew, yes, that is a heavy one. But also, I live for the revenge.
Mm-hmm.
The revenge is it's giving, it's serving. So, and with these, I feel like, I don't know, I guess I just remember them more. But I'm like, there's always like a trifling parent who's cheating or something. I don't know. I feel like I don't know. That's probably just sticking out to me more. But because it's like, stop being messy. Anyway.
Messy parents can sometimes like my parents are the opposite of messy parents. Like, yeah, they're like the most like stable, easygoing, unruffable, mm-hmm, unflappable parents. So like when I read messy parents, there's like something in me that's like, whoa. Not that like I wish my parents were messy, but like it's complicated.
It's different.
It's different. And I do know, you know, a lot of people who've had parents whose, you know, issues have kind of definitely spilled over to their kids. And I think that's really hard, but that's why it's really necessary in YA, because like as a teen, you're like, how do you even begin to handle this? So it's good to see that representation in YA.
Yeah, definitely. Well, my parents are definitely messy AF. So I'm like, yep, I see that. Yep, I see that too. And like my friends' parents are messy. So yeah, but yeah, you're right. I think it's so important for YA to deal with like different types of messiness, scary things, all that, because there are kids out there who deal with that stuff on the regular, which is a good segue into the first book I'm going to talk about, which is Into the Light by Mark Oshiro. And this one is about Manny, who is a queer 17-year-old Latine kid. He was kicked out of his house. He and his sister Elena were adopted. He was kicked out and he has been houseless and living in the wilderness in the southwestern United States. So houselessness is real. A lot of teens experience it. Just going off of your point, Tirza, of like, you know, these things should be written about in YA because real teens are experiencing these things every day. So with Manny, apart from just trying to survive each day and taking like these odd jobs and stuff like that, he's also been paying attention to these videos that are being released by this religious organization called Christ Dominion. And he does that just to make sure his sister Elena is okay, because he left this like the cult-like religious organization, but his sister's still there. So one day he hears of a body that was found outside a religious camp, and he's scared that it's her. So the book has a non-linear timeline as it builds up tension and explains how Manny came to be where he is, living and doing, like I said, the odd jobs and without stable housing, because as I mentioned a second ago, he basically left these religious people who were like very culty. And so he has to make his way back to this cult to make sure his sister is alive and breathing and well. And so, you know, obvious content warnings. This book can be stressful. It obviously gets into some trauma. It also explores issues with like white saviorism, houselessness, being queer and houseless as a teen, which, by the way, in case you didn't know, I think I've mentioned this before, but the likelihood of becoming houseless increases greatly for queer kids, especially queer kids of color. So again, this is like, you know, fiction reflecting real life. So like I said, there's a nonlinear timeline. There are also some speculative elements and a big twist. And I feel like you will be on the edge of your seat trying to get to the end, trying to find out like what is really going on. And this has also been compared to Courtney Summers and Tiffany D. Jackson's books. In that it can be very like, well, the phrase they use in the book blurb is ripped from the headlines. And I was trying to think of something else, but I feel like that's accurate. Like, just like Invisible Sun, which I read earlier this year, some of the events, they just felt like, I'm like, I feel like I've come across this before. And I realized once I read Kim Johnson's author's notes that she had taken some stuff from some actual headlines and actual stories and just incorporated them really well into her narrative. So Definitely pick this up. It is, again, called Into the Light by Mark Oshiro.
Oh my gosh, I did not know that that's what that book was about. Like, I think it's kind of always been on my radar, and I've seen the cover and the title a lot, but I don't think I'd ever stop to like look at and see what it was about. So now my interest is definitely piqued. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I didn't realize. It's one of those things, too. For some reason, I didn't realize what it was about until I picked it up and like started. I don't know. I feel what you're saying. I feel like we're on the same page, apart from like when I, you know, got into it. I was like, oh, I did not know this was like a mystery, like, you know, a whole bunch of stuff going on.
Yeah, that sounds really good. So, okay, my next pick is North Ranger by Ray Terciero and Bree Indigo. It is a graphic novel, and I think I've talked about this one on the podcast.
You have. Okay. You have, and you're the reason it's literally on my kitchen table right now.
Yeah. Yay. I love that. Yes. It's so good. So first thing you need to know is that it is a Jane Austen, Northanger Abbey retelling set on a Texas ranch, which I love. And it stars a Mexican-American teen boy. And it's also very queer. So yay for all of these things.
Yay.
Yeah. So it's about Cade. He lives with his mom and his sister and his stepfather and abuela. They live in a city in Texas. I can't remember which city. And you kind of get the sense from early on that they're struggling. And Cade, of course, is personally struggling because he is closeted. He's kind of afraid of like what his stepdad will say if he comes out. And he misses his dad, who's no longer in his life. He sort of deals with all this by like a love of horror. He loves watching horror movies. And the family is struggling financially. He finds out one day that his stepfather is going to go live and work on a working ranch for the summer. And the ranch is owned by somebody he knew from his days in the army. And guess what? Cade gets to go with. And Cade is not happy about this at all. He does not want a summer he's okay with the idea of getting a summer job, but he does not want his summer job to be working on a ranch in the middle of nowhere, Texas, with his stepfather, who he's afraid might be homophobic. And like, this is just not his scene whatsoever.
Also, isn't it hot?
Yeah, that's probably hot too.
Texas summer ranch. No, thank you.
It doesn't sound like the best. Like, yeah, and this ranch is like in the middle of nowhere. Like, it's a good like 20 to 30 minute drive from the small town. Like, it's really out there. Yeah. I mean, frankly, I'm not sure I would be particularly pleased about spending my entire summer working on a ranch. So I get it.
Yeah.
And so he goes and, you know, because his parents don't really give him a choice. They're like, you're doing this. But he gets there. And the one nice thing about this ranch is that the ranch owner's son, Henry, is very cute and about his age. Yeah. And so he's kind of like, okay, maybe it's not all bad. But of course, this is a Northanger Abbey retelling. So Henry has a secret, and it has to do with his mom's death. And there's like some simmering tension between Henry and his dad and Henry and his sister. And Cade sort of overhears some things that make him think like, oh, geez, like there might have been something very suspicious going on here. And then he starts to hear the rumors. And so even as he's falling for Henry, he's also like, is there something I need to be concerned about? And so I will leave it at that. But it is really excellent. I loved the art. Like, it's kind of mostly done up in this, like, burnt orange sort of, like, verging onto, like, purple sort of color scheme. It's very gorgeous for, like, the art and the setting. And I just thought that it was a fantastic graphic novel. So that's North Ranger by Ray Terciero and Bree Indigo.
Yes, like I said, your endorsement of it from whichever episode it was we did a while back had me putting it on hold at the library, and it is now on my kitchen table.
Yes.
I mean, to be fair, it is what, a stack of other books. We're gonna get there though. Okay, we're gonna get to that, and it does look really good. And I feel like no one checked it out and it's new and crisp for me. Ha 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 ha.
Perfect.
Yes. So I have another great book to get into. Before I do, we'll hear again from our sponsor. Okay, so next book I have is titled Lucha of the Night Forest by Taylor K. Mejia. And this is another book with teens going through it, which I feel like probably says something maybe about me, as I'm the one who was attracted to these books. I don't know, but this one is really cool. So it is about Lucha, who is 16 and lives in this like kind of harsh world. Her mother struggles with drug addiction, and her younger sister often have to basically figure things out for themselves. So that figuring things out for themselves is how Lucha comes to her very interesting way she makes money, which is that she has this gift that allows her to make money hunting monsters. And if you listen to this show often, and also Tears, I know you're probably like, okay, that sounds very on-brand for Erica. So like, if you listen to the show often, it's like, true, you can start to see at least partially, yeah, why this book appeals to me. Also, the cover's really pretty. So yes, she's hunting monsters. And so Lucha and her sister Liz end up without a home once their mother disappears. And I promise I didn't mean for both of my books to have houselessness in common. I don't know how that happened, but here we are. So anyway, so to save herself and her sister, Lucha ends up making a deal with, what is his name again? El Sediento, which is this like nightmarish figure who haunts people. So it's like, it's giving deal with the devil, basically, right? Not necessarily a one-to-one comparison, but that's like the feel. So then her choices lead to her having to go on the run, where she meets Paz, who is this like very alluring and mysterious acolyte of a goddess. So right there, we get into the thick of it. There's a lot going on. There's magic. There are monsters. There's this dangerous forest. And so as she learns more about like the more fantastical elements of her world, like the, you know, these gods and goddesses and spirits and all that stuff, as she learns more about that, her powers grow and she's growing into herself, and she finds herself in the middle of these old powerful gods. They're like feuding or whatever. I guess they don't have anything else to do, you know, whatever. So she is caught in the middle of that, basically. This has queer romance, adventure, fantasy, this really cool like world that is obviously inspired by Latin America. And yeah, it's just like dark fantasy. There are dark forces. It's, yeah. So I recommend, again, it's titled Lucha of the Night Forest by Taylor K. Mejia.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
All right. My next pick, I sort of mentioned it recently, but not really gone into it, I think, in depth. It is The Fall of Whit Rivera by Crystal Maldonado. And if you like all things fall and romance and just like cozy sweater weather, that sort of stuff, this book is for you.
Oh, it takes place in the fall. It does. Also, in addition to, okay, the title has layers. There are layers.
There are layers. It's a pun. I love it.
Yes. Very on brand. Yes, I love it.
Yes. So I was going to read this book ahead of our podcast recording, but I literally got access to the ARC like 10 minutes before we hopped on this call so we could record.
Perfect timing.
I was like, oh, this is great. So I got to read like the first paragraph. But perfect. I'm super excited. The publisher marketing says that, and this is a quote, "The Fall of Whit Rivera is a snug and cozy autumn rom-com that also tackles weightier topics like PCOS, chronic illness, sexuality, fat phobia, Latinx identity, and class." So yay, I'm excited for this one. It is about Whit and Zay. They have been like frenemies who kind of like low-key hate each other for a really long time. they used to date, but Zay broke up with Wit in a very embarrassing way, and as a result, they are at odds. But they are forced to work together because they have to plan the fall formal. And for Wit, this is like an absolute disaster because she's very much like type A, organized. Everything has to be just so. And Zay is very relaxed, just kind of go with the flow type of person. So obviously heads are butting, sparks are flying. But then along the way, they have to confront the idea that maybe their feuding has been a little bit of a misunderstanding this entire time. And maybe they actually do still like each other. So I'm excited for this one. It sounds so good. And I mean, we have waxed poetic about how much we love fall. So It's during fall. I can't wait. And now I have it downloaded. So I'm excited to actually read it. But I just had to shout this one out because it's a new one and it comes out October 10th. So by the time you are listening to this, you only have to wait a couple of weeks, and then you can get it yourself. So, you know, pre-order it, request it from your library, do all the things. It sounds like it's going to be the perfect book for October.
Yes, that sounds awesome. I know we are both like pretty big seasonal readers, so I am also really getting into the fall. Have we had this discussion? Are you a pumpkin spice girly? Like, are you into pumpkin spice?
Oh, I love pumpkin spice so, so much. Tragically, at the beginning of this year, I know you're laughing at me.
You just had like an out-of-body experience.
I have very strong feelings. At the beginning of this year, I discovered that I have a complete intolerance for caffeine. Like, it gives me all sorts of like really bad health side effects. I know, it's really sad. So like I had to completely give up caffeine altogether. Gotcha. Like I can't even do like decaf coffee
because
it still has caffeine in it, just like a little bit, but even a little bit will just mess me up. So it's like not the most tragic thing to ever happen to me, but it feels very sad many times. I was actually dealing with it pretty well. Like I had to give up coffee it was like January or February worst. I just went cold turkey, no more caffeine. And like the first couple of days stink. But then after that, you just like your body adapts and you're like, oh, okay. But the worst part has been entering into pumpkin spice season and realizing that like everything pumpkin spice I can't have, like drink wise. And it's making me the saddest ever. The closest I've gotten to like a pumpkin spice beverage is, I don't know if you guys have Culver's where you are, but it's very much a big popular Midwestern fast food type place, but they have a pumpkin spice milkshake. And so that is sadly the only pumpkin spice that's not caffeinated that I've been able to like drink in this like last month or so. But anywho, yes, I'm sorry. I had strong feelings about pumpkin spice and the fact that I can't have it. So
I didn't realize that was a big question. I'm sorry. I feel you. I'm sorry about that intolerance. That is tough.
I'm surviving. It's okay. I'm surviving.
Right. But I get it because it's like, you know, the season and everything like that. At least you have your pumpkin spice milkshake.
I do.
As a beverage. So yes. I'm happy for that. Yay for Culver's coming through. But yeah. Oh my gosh. Jeez. That is annoying.
That is so sad. So drink a pumpkin spice for me. Do you read your listeners?
I was about to say, I'm going to go after we record. I'm going to go to Starbucks, get a pumpkin spice latte, and pour a little out for you, Tirza.
Thank you.
A little out for the homies who couldn't drink it. Yes. Oh, my goodness. But yes, fall is amazing. Fall is wonderful. I'm excited for it as well. The next book I have for today is Nigeria Jones by E.B. Savoy. And this one, I feel like it also has some similarities with the first book I mentioned in a way, but then also not. I don't know. The similarities are kind of light. But anyway, so this is about Nigeria, who her parents are part of this like black separatist group who try to fight like racism and oppression by educating their kids, like homeschooling them. They're vegan. They try to connect to like Western African traditions to kind of like center them in their heritage and stuff like that. The thing is that Nigeria, as this book goes on, she starts to question things that she's been taught all her life. For one, her mother, who is, you know, her mother is like a partner with her father, and they were both part of this movement. Her mother disappears. And now Nigeria's world is like all shaken up because her mother was such a big part of what she believed in, her life. Obviously, it's her mother. So her world just gets rocked. And now Nigeria suddenly finds herself taking care of her baby brother and becoming, like, stepping into this role that she, like, wasn't really trying to step into. And I feel her as an older sibling. You know, older siblings, sometimes we bear the brunt. Okay, I totally feel her on that. So as Nigeria's mother stays missing, basically, like, over that time, Nigeria comes to find out certain things she didn't know about her mother. Again, rocking her world. So for one, like I said, the movement, they homeschool their kids. But Nigeria's mother wanted for her kids to go to this Quaker school, this private Quaker school, kind of expose them to these different viewpoints and stuff, and to make their experience and their education less insular, I think is the word I'm looking for. Her dad disapproved, but she ends up going anyway. And there she starts to come into herself. So she's searching for her mother throughout the book. She uncovers some things, like I mentioned before. And again, that makes her question everything. And one thing with this book is that there's a lot of nuance. So it's dealing with race, which is connected to gender and all of those things, all those identities and stuff like that. There's obviously, you know, a lot of racism and stuff like that. And how people choose to deal with it differs. Some people respond to it very strongly. Some people don't respond at all. And I think this book looks at, it considers people's different responses, and it doesn't necessarily paint any one person as a big villain. But again, so that therein lies that nuance. And it's up to Nigeria to determine what is right for her, despite her upbringing. Like, she retains some of her upbringing, but she's also forging her own new path. And you are along for the ride of, you know, on that journey, as well as finding out what happened to her mother. So it's very interesting in that way. I don't think I've read any books like this before. So again, that's Nigeria Jones by E.B. Zoboi.
I have not read this book. I have a copy. It is currently in one of my many boxes that are yet to be unpacked and are still in storage until we figure out our permanent living situation. But I'm really excited to read that one. And just a shout out, I loved EB's book Pride.
Mm.
Such a fantastic book.
Wasn't that a retelling of Pride and Prejudice?
Yes. It is a retelling of Pride and Prejudice. And the audiobook is narrated by Elizabeth Acevedo.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Okay. That is cool.
Yes.
I wasn't expecting that.
I love it. And I mean, I love Elizabeth Acevedo's work too. She has a new book out called Family Lore, but it's adult. It's not YA. However, if you like her YA stuff, definitely sounds like it's worth checking out. But I always listen to her stuff on audio because she narrates the audiobooks, and it's just such a great experience. So,
yeah, that makes a lot of sense because I think she's a poet too.
Yes.
Right? And a lot of times they have like just, it's poetry is very lyrical, and there's a lot deliver great audio performances.
Yeah, I think she's like a spoken word slam poet. And
yes.
And the protagonist of E.B. Zoboi's Pride is also a poet. So it works out.
Oh, yeah. Layers.
Yes. All these connections.
All these connections. We're just connecting things today. We got this. Yes.
All right, my next pick is Suddenly a Murder by Lauren Munoz, and it is a newer book, and it is about Izzy Morales, who is going with her best friend and five of their friends to a 1920s themed party at this place called Ashwood Manor. And Ashwood Manor is like really popular for being like this location of like one of their favorite horror films. And so they're really excited because they're getting into the 1920s vibe and theme. And it's going to be just a great night. It's, you know, celebrating their high school graduation. But before the end of the night, Izzy's best friend Cassidy's boyfriend turns up dead. And investigators come to the scene. They are like, this is definitely a murder. And now all six of the remaining people who are still alive are a suspect. And they each kind of have their roles to play. But what is the most, I would say, incriminating piece of evidence is that Cassidy's boyfriend was killed with a knife that Izzy just happened to bring to the party.
Oh.
Whoops. Yeah. So.
Why are we bringing knives to parties?
Yeah. This is a good question. And, okay, you know, I thought so. You do find, like, there is a reason for the knife being at the party.
Right.
But, you know, it seems like a really reasonable reason until somebody ended up dead.
It's a raggedy situation. Yeah.
Now it's kind of a red flag. So, yes. And so the story is told with, like, the interrogation of, like, the entire group. And they're trying to, like, piece together and put back together what happened and figure out who killed the boy. So if you like murder mysteries, if you like, I guess, it's a contemporary book, but like I was gonna say, like period sort of themes, because it's set in the 19 the theme of the party is like 1920s. It's got a vibe for certain. So that is Suddenly a Murder by Lauren Munoz.
It's set in the 1920s.
It's not set in the 20s. It's contemporary, but like their party is like 1920s themed.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I missed the word. My bad.
No, sorry.
I was like, ooh, spicy.
I didn't explain that very well, but yes.
No, I still appreciate that element, though. I appreciate you giving that. Leave it to you to bring out some very interesting sounding mysteries. So that's going to the TBR. Thanks so much. Yes, and it makes sense. Given, again, the books. But yes, my final pick for today is The Making of Yolanda la Bruja by Lorraine Avila, which the title, okay? The Making of Yolanda la Bruja. Bruja, if you're not familiar, is like witch, basically in Spanish. So The Making of Yolanda the Witch. So Yolanda Alvarez is a teenager, is a Black Dominican teenager living in the Bronx. She comes from this great, supportive, close-knit family, has great friends, and she has this really strong bond with her grandmother, who is also a bruja, Mama Tete, who is also her mentor, guiding her on her spiritual journey and stuff like that. She's happy that she is about to get initiated into her family's bruja tradition pretty soon. But then this white boy shows up. He is the son of a politician and he's like mad racist. He joins this club called the Brave Space Club, which is an activist group that Yolanda leads. And he joins it basically just to be like a rabble rouser. And I hope that term just came to me. I hope I'm using that correctly. But basically just to kick up dirt, just to like cause trouble. And the spirits, the ancestors are telling her like, this kid is bad news, apart from just the obvious him, you know, causing trouble. And she starts to have these visions of this boy committing this terrible violence. So she wants to protect her community. Obviously, she's an activist. She's deeply connected to her family and her community. But she doesn't know how to warn people adequately about this threat and have them actually listen to her. So she has to fall on her, like the wisdom of her grandmother, of her ancestors, and her spiritual guides. And so this book, it talks about gun violence, race, obviously, education, obviously their spirituality as well. And I like how this feels like, obviously there are, well, why I even hesitate to say fantastical elements, because for some people, for many cultures, like, you know, magic and witchiness is part of the religion. Bruja is part of the spiritual tradition. So it's not necessarily seen as fantastical. It's just part of the belief system. And I feel like I like how this felt like it was still very much rooted in our world, like the world that we live in, because it's showing a belief system. And it also reminded me, I'm trying to remember, I don't know if you've read this book, Tirza. It's like The Haunting of Something by Ryan Douglas.
Oh, The Taking of Jake Livingston?
Yes. How did you know that? Oh, because I said... Oh.
You said Ryan Douglas, and that's what it
is. Okay.
I have not read it, but the book is literally sitting within, like, you know, 5 feet of me. And I've been like, I pulled it out of my packing boxes because I was like, I need to read this for October. So, yes.
Yes. I read it a couple years ago. I really liked it. And this reminds me of that a little bit. If you do end up reading it, then you'll probably be like, all right, I see what she was saying. But yeah, so this is a pretty good one. Again, The Making of Yolanda La Bruja by Lorena Vila. Check that out for sure.
Sounds really good.
Yeah.
I did want to give one little, like, honorable mention to a book that doesn't come out until January. But when I saw the title and, like, what it was about, I was like, oh my gosh, this is on my TBR. I just felt, like, a little rude to tell you about it, considering it's only, like, it's another 3 months. But
yeah, that's fine.
All right. So this book is Just Say Yes by Goldie Moldavsky. And it is about Ximena Ramos, and she does, it's like, she grows up not knowing that she is undocumented. And so she finds this out when she's 17, and, you know, she has, like, this future planned ahead of her. She lives in New York City. She loves New York City. She definitely does not want to leave. And really the most logical sort of solution that she can come to in order to get her green card and be able to stay and start college and do all the things that she wants to do is she's like, I just need to find somebody to marry me, right? Like, a little green card marriage can't hurt anybody. And so she's like, you know what? I should ask my next door neighbor and, like, really good friend, just like, hey, just marry me, just say yes. Mm-hmm. But he's kind of like, you know, I like you, but, like, I don't think I want to marry you.
Understandably.
You're only 17.
I feel you, my guy. Yeah.
I know. So she's kind of, like, bummed about that. And so she decides to, like, turn to internet dating and try to, like, yeah, you know, figure out this plan. So this is, it is YA. I do want to, like, emphasize that, because I know people are like, marriage, is that, you know?
Yeah, that is, sounds a little mature.
Yeah, but it is YA. She's 17. Obviously, you know, there's only one other book that I can think of in YA where a character was like 17 or 18 and wanted to get married and was like gonna go through with it and doesn't, like, it just, you know, not a thing that usually works out for 17 and 18 year olds. So
I would say not. Yeah, I mean, it doesn't work out for older people either,
right?
Let's just be real.
To be honest, yeah,
to, like, be real, yeah.
Yeah. There is a book that came out in 2010 called I Now Pronounce You Someone Else by Erin McCann. And that is also about a girl who has her own reasons for wanting to get married at 17. And basically it's like escaping her family.
Oh, my gosh.
But anywho, yeah. So I think, you know, I'll be curious to see how this one turns out. But I mean, the you get all the props for the title and also the premise. I think it sounds really great.
Yeah, it sounds like a good one.
So look for it in January.
Yeah, which is actually not that far in advance, honestly.
You shut your mouth, Erica.
I know. I'm sorry. But it's true.
It's sad, but true.
It's very sad, but true, yeah.
Yeah. So, anywho, but I believe that is all we have for you this week. Thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for tuning in. And I hope that you leave us some feedback on the show on Apple Podcasts. or Spotify, however you're listening to us. It helps others find us, also lets us know how we're doing. And if you want to drop us a direct line, you can always do so at heyya@bookriot.com. And don't forget to visit bookriot.com for newsletters, more podcasts, and all things bookish, as well as bookriot.substack.com for more fun stuff. Thank you to today's sponsors for making the show possible. And thank you, as always, to our awesome audio editor, Jen Zink, who edits out our kitten disasters and whatnot. We appreciate you, Jen.
Our catastrophes, if you will.
Ba-dum-bum. Anywho, you can follow me on Instagram, and I did join Blue Sky. I'm not sure if I like it there or not, but Instagram, you can find me there until somebody ruins it. So what about you, Erica? God.
So hopeful for the future, Tirza. I appreciate the optimism. I'm on the dumpster fire. No, I'm on Twitter at @Erica_EZE_. I also got a Blue Sky. I don't even remember my username. I'm not sure how I feel about it yet, but we'll see. We'll see. You know, we're seeing how Blue Sky is.
Yeah, the thing about new social media platforms is, like, I get on them and then I feel like I don't know what I need to say. And then I realize that I really am boring, like, 90% of the time. And most of my activity is, like, reposting and retweeting, like, what's other smarter, funnier people say. So, I gotta build up that Blue Sky presence to find all the smart, funny people so I can share their stuff instead of coming up with stuff on my own.
I feel you. I totally, I'm right there with you.
So, anywho. But yes, we hope you do find us online. We are occasionally hilarious and entertaining. But in the meantime, we will be back in 2 weeks. And have a great couple of weeks and happy reading.